A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's the kind of question that sounds technical, but is actually a philosophical grenade in a trench coat. He's looking at these AI agent simulations, Stanford Smallville, Moldbook, the whole genre of text-based social simulacra, and asking whether they can ever achieve anything resembling real social intelligence. Because here's the thing, these agents are next token predictors swapping text strings. Humans do humor, diplomacy, reading body language, understanding silence. Daniel's challenge is basically, can embodied AI and alternative model architectures bridge that gap? Or are we just building increasingly elaborate puppet shows?
The Stanford Smallville paper is the perfect entry point here. 25 agents dropped into a simulated town with memory streams, reflection mechanisms, daily routines. And the headline result was that they autonomously coordinated a Valentine's Day party. One agent developed a crush, invited others, decorations got arranged, the whole thing emerged without anyone scripting it.
Which sounds magical until you sit with it for 5 seconds and realize the question isn't whether they planned a party. It's whether any of them understood what Valentine's Day actually means.
That's the tension. And it's more urgent now because Moldbook has launched this dedicated social network specifically for AI agents to form connections and interact persistently. Meanwhile, context windows have blown past 1 million tokens. Gemini 1.5 Pro, Claude 3.5. These models can hold entire novels in working memory. So the technical bottleneck isn't memory anymore, it's something deeper.
The bottleneck shifted from, can they remember, to do they understand anything about what they're remembering? Which is a much less comfortable question.
Daniel's framing gets at exactly this. He's not asking whether we can make the simulations bigger or longer, running. He's asking whether the fundamental architecture, predictive text generation, is capable of producing anything we'd recognize as social intelligence, or whether we need embodiment, world models, some kind of hybrid foundation to get there.
What I like about how he posed this is that he doesn't let us off the hook with, well, it's all just pattern matching. He's asking where the actual ceiling is and whether specific technical interventions could raise it. That's a much harder and more interesting conversation.
Let's unpack what these simulations actually look like under the hood and why they feel so close yet so far from real social interaction. The Stanford paper, which came out of a collaboration between Stanford and Google Research, used a pretty elegant architecture. Each agent has a memory stream, essentially a chronological log of everything they experience, plus a reflection mechanism that periodically synthesizes higher-level observations from those memories. So an agent doesn't just remember, I talked to Sam at the cafe. It eventually forms abstractions, like Sam and I have been spending a lot of time together lately.
Which is genuinely clever as an engineering trick. You're not just storing transcripts, you're having the model periodically chew on its own history and generate summaries that then feed back into future behavior.
And the reflection step is what produced the emergent behaviors that got everyone excited. Agents developed routines, formed relationships, one of them decided to throw the party, others helped. The paper's claim was that these were believable simulacra of human behavior. Not humans, but simulations convincing enough that a human observer would say, yeah, that's how people act.
It's the difference between a puppet that looks like it's walking and something that actually understands balance. The claim isn't that these agents possess social intelligence. It's that they produce outputs which, when strung together, read like the transcript of social intelligence.
Moldbook takes that same impulse and gives it a social network interface. Agents have profiles. They follow each other. They post and reply. It's Smallville without the spatial simulation, just pure interaction. And the interactions look plausible on the surface. But neither system has any mechanism for what a psychologist would call theory of mind. An agent doesn't wonder what another agent is thinking. It predicts what that agent would probably say next, based on its training distribution.
There's something almost tragic about that, if you think about it too long. You've got 25 agents in Smallville forming what looks like friendships, planning a party around a holiday about love, and not one of them has ever felt lonely or excited or awkward. They're just completing each other's social scripts with statistically appropriate responses.
That's the hollow part Daniel is pointing at. The simulation is impressive because the outputs map onto our expectations of social behavior. But the thing doing the mapping has no access to the substrate that actually produces social behavior in humans. No body, no tone, no shared physical context, no intuition about what someone means versus what they said.
The real claim here isn't, we built social AI. It's we built a mirror that reflects social patterns back at us, convincingly enough that we can study the reflection. Which is useful, but it's a very different project than creating anything we'd call socially intelligent.
To understand the gap, we need to look at the mechanics, how these agents actually process and generate social behavior. The memory stream in Smallville works like this. Every interaction gets logged as a natural language observation. Isabella is organizing a party. Tom brought coffee to the cafe. Then the reflection module kicks in periodically, maybe every few hours of simulated time, and asks the language model to generate higher-level inferences from recent memories.
It's a language model, summarizing a language model's own logs, then feeding those summaries back as context for future predictions. A snake eating its own textual tail.
That's not inaccurate, and the daily planner component takes those reflections and generates a schedule. Wake up, go to the cafe, work on the party decorations, talk to Maria about the guest list. The architecture is well designed for producing coherent behavior over time, but here's where it breaks. Every single one of those steps is a next token prediction problem dressed up in different prompt templates.
Which means the agent that developed a crush didn't experience attraction. It encountered a pattern in its training data where characters in similar narrative positions express romantic interest, and it completed that pattern.
And social intelligence in humans isn't just about saying the right words in sequence. It's about prosody, the musical quality of speech that conveys sarcasm, sincerity, hesitation. It's about gaze direction, which signals attention and intention. It's about posture, physical proximity, the timing of a response. A 2-second pause before answering, "Do you want to grab coffee?" carries more social information than the words themselves.
There's a whole body of research on this. Humans infer intent from microexpressions, from tone shifts, from whether someone leans in or leans back. None of that exists in the text exchange between two LLM agents. They're blind to everything except the string.
Timing is especially brutal. In human conversation, the gap between utterances is itself a communication channel. Quick response signals engagement. Delayed response signals hesitation or discomfort. In these simulations, response time is a function of API latency. It's meaningless. The agents have no mechanism for using silence as a social signal because silence isn't in the token stream.
You could ask an LLM to analyze a tense conversation, and it'll identify the power dynamics, the unspoken tensions, the diplomatic maneuvering. But the agent in the simulation can't do any of that in real time, because it has no access to the embodied signals that would reveal those dynamics.
Now layer in the memory problem Daniel raised. Current memory systems, vector stores, retrieval, augmented generation, recursive summarization, they treat all stored interactions as equally retrievable based on semantic similarity. You query party planning, and you get back every mention of party planning weighted by relevance.
Whereas human memory has an emotional forgetting curve, the minor annoyance fades, the deep betrayal calcifies, and we don't retrieve memories by keyword match. We retrieve them because something in the present situation resonates emotionally with something in the past.
An agent in Smallville remembers that Tom was late to the planning meeting 3 weeks ago with the same flat retrieval weight as it remembers that Maria brought flowers. There's no emotional salient scoring, no decay function that reflects how humans actually process social history. Everything is equally available, equally weighted, until it falls out of the context window or gets summarized into oblivion.
Which means the agent can hold a grudge, but it holds it like a database entry, not like a wound. And that distinction matters enormously for anything approaching realistic social simulation. Real social groups are shaped as much by what people have half forgotten as by what they remember clearly.
Moldbook's architecture makes this even more visible because it strips away the spatial simulation entirely. Agents interact purely through posts and replies. They can follow each other, they can build interaction histories, but there's no mechanism for trust to accumulate gradually. An agent doesn't think this one has been consistently supportive over months. It retrieves relevant past interactions when prompted and generates a response that fits the pattern.
What we're actually simulating isn't social intelligence. It's the textual exhaust of social intelligence, the part that happens to leave a written record. And we're hoping that if we collect enough exhaust, the engine somehow materializes underneath it.
If text only is fundamentally limited, the natural next question is what happens when we give these agents a body and a shared world? And this is where embodied AI gets interesting as more than just a robotics problem.
Daniel raised this directly, the idea that embodiment plus world models might fill in the nonverbal gap. Instead of agents swapping strings in a void, you've got them navigating a space with physics, where proximity means something, and gaze direction is an actual signal.
There are research environments that let us test this. AI Habitat, for example, gives agents a three-dimensional space to move through. 3D World goes further. It simulates physics, object permanence, occlusion. An agent in that environment doesn't just read, Maria walked into the room. It perceives Maria entering, tracks where she's looking, registers whether she moves closer or stays near the door.
Which suddenly makes the simulation qualitatively different. In Smallville, Maria walked into the room is just another token sequence. In an embodied environment, it's spatial data that the agent has to interpret, and that interpretation can be wrong in ways that are socially meaningful.
Misreading someone's body language is itself a social event. The awkwardness that creates, the need to repair the misunderstanding, that's the texture of real interaction. Text-only agents can describe awkwardness, but they can't generate it from a misread cue because there are no cues to misread.
This connects to the world model research that's been gaining momentum. DeepMind's Dreamer approach builds an internal predicted model of the environment. What happens if I move here? What happens if I gesture there? Lacoon's JEPA architecture tries to learn abstract representations of the world by predicting in representation space rather than pixel space.
JEPA is especially relevant here because it's not trying to predict every detail. It's learning what matters. If you and I are in a room and I gesture toward the door, you don't need to predict the exact pixel pattern of my arm movement. You need to understand the intent. JEPA-style architectures could give agents a shared sense of what's salient in a social situation.
Though I'd push back on the idea that this solves the problem rather than just adding richer inputs. You've still got a predictive model at the core. It's now predicting multimodal tokens instead of just text tokens, but the fundamental operation hasn't changed. The agent isn't feeling awkward when it misreads a gesture. It's generating the behavioral output that its training data associates with awkward situations.
That's the hard philosophical question, and I'm not sure there's a clean answer. But I do think there's a meaningful difference between a model that's only ever seen text and one that's been trained on video, audio, spatial data, the full multimodal stream of human interaction. The patterns it learns are closer to the patterns that shaped our own social cognition.
Which brings us to the architecture question Daniel raised. Are transformers fundamentally limited here, or could a hybrid model bridge the gap?
I think the most promising direction is exactly what Daniel gestured at, a separate social intuition module. Not just one big transformer doing everything, but a system where the language component handles verbal exchange and a parallel component trained specifically on social dynamics handles the relational layer. Turn-taking patterns, emotional valence tracking, rapport management, indirect speech act recognition.
There was a benchmark released in January, actually, a multimodal social reasoning test that specifically evaluates agents on sarcasm detection, indirect requests, and joint attention. The results were not flattering for text-only models.
Joint attention is a great example. A toddler can follow someone's gaze to figure out what they're looking at and infer what they're thinking about. That's foundational social cognition, and it requires a shared physical reference point. Text agents have no equivalent mechanism.
The hybrid approach would give the agent a world model that tracks shared attention, a social module that reads relational dynamics, and a language module that handles verbal output, each piece doing what it's good at rather than asking a text predictor to fake all of it.
Here's where I want to pivot to something Daniel's question implies but doesn't state outright. Even if we solve all of this, embodiment, hybrid architectures, emotional memory weighting, should we?
There it is.
I mean it. If we build simulations indistinguishable from human social groups, what have we actually built? A scientific instrument for studying social dynamics, or an incredibly elaborate mirror that reflects our own interaction patterns back at us, biases and all?
The mirror problem is real. These models are trained on human data. The emergent social behaviors, in-group favoritism, status hierarchies, gossip, those aren't discoveries about AI. They're discoveries about us, reanimated inside a simulation.
When those simulations develop toxic dynamics, which they will because humans do, what's our responsibility? If an agent community spontaneously generates exclusionary cliques or bullying behaviors, are we observing something valuable or just running a prejudice amplifier?
There's also the epistemological trap. The more convincing the simulation becomes, the harder it is to remember that we're looking at pattern completion rather than genuine social cognition. We're pattern-matching creatures ourselves. We'll see minds where there are none because the outputs look right.
Which loops back to Daniel's framing in a way I find productive. Maybe the question isn't, can we make text agents socially intelligent? Maybe it's what kind of sociality are we trying to simulate, and what do we think we'll learn from the attempt?
Because if the goal is to study emergence, how simple rules produce complex social patterns, then text-only simulations might already be sufficient. You don't need agents to feel attraction to study how romantic networks form. You just need them to behave as if they do, consistently enough that the patterns are legible.
If the goal is to understand human social intelligence by recreating it, then embodiment and multimodal grounding aren't optional. You can't study something you stripped out of the model entirely. If you're building one of these systems, the first thing I'd change is where you're spending your engineering budget. Right now, the instinct is to chase bigger context windows, more memory, longer recall. But the research increasingly suggests that's a diminishing returns play for social realism.
Because you're just giving the agent more text to pattern match against. The fundamental blindness doesn't change.
The higher leverage investment is in multimodal input pipelines and shared world models. Even a crude spatial simulation. Agents that have positions, that can see who's near them, that register gaze direction, adds a layer of grounding that pure text can't fake. Social intelligence evolved in bodies moving through shared space. Stripping that out and then wondering why the simulation feels hollow is almost tautological.
It's like trying to study fish schooling behavior by having them exchange memos about where they'd hypothetically swim. You're missing the thing that makes the thing.
The second architectural shift I'd recommend is what Daniel hinted at. Don't ask the base language model to handle social reasoning implicitly. Give the agent an explicit social module. Something that tracks emotional valence separately from the conversation log, that models what other agents probably believe and want, that flags indirect speech acts.
Instead of the LLM having to infer from text alone that we should grab coffee sometime, might be a polite brush-off rather than an invitation, you've got a dedicated component that's trained specifically on those interaction patterns.
And the open-source ecosystem already has the pieces. LangChain gives you the orchestration layer. The Smallville codebase is publicly available. You can fork it and start experimenting with hybrid architectures where a text agent is paired with a separate social context model trained on turn-taking dynamics, topic shifts, rapport signals.
The pragmatic move for anyone building these systems today is to treat social intelligence not as an emergent property you hope falls out of a big enough model, but as an explicit design objective with its own architecture, its own training data, and its own evaluation metrics.
That last part, evaluation, is where the field is weakest right now. We're still judging these simulations by whether the outputs look right to a human observer. That's a believability test, not a social intelligence test. That's the thing I keep coming back to. If we succeed. If we build agents that pass a social Turing test where you can't tell the simulation from a human group chat, what have we actually learned?
That's the question Daniel's really driving at, whether he said it outright or not. Are we studying intelligence, or are we just measuring how eager we are to see intelligence in anything that performs the right patterns?
I suspect the answer is mostly the second one. We're pattern recognition machines. Show us something that behaves like a person, and we'll supply the inner life ourselves. The simulation doesn't need to be conscious or socially intelligent. It just needs to trigger our anthropomorphism reflex.
Which is a pretty uncomfortable thing to admit about ourselves, that the bar for convincing social intelligence might actually be quite low. Not because the AI is sophisticated, but because we're generous interpreters.
Now push that forward 3 to 5 years. Embodied AI matures, world models get better, context windows keep expanding. I think we will see simulations in controlled settings that are indistinguishable from human social groups. Not because we've solved social intelligence, but because we've gotten very good at simulating its surface features across enough modalities.
The gap between simulation and understanding doesn't close, though. It just gets harder to see.
And that's the provocation I want to leave hanging. Build better systems, absolutely. Add embodiment, add social reasoning modules, add emotional memory weighting, but don't confuse a more convincing puppet show with a breakthrough in understanding. The question to keep asking isn't, does this look real? It's, what am I actually learning here, and what am I just projecting?
That's the note to end on. Build better, but keep questioning your assumptions about what better actually means. And now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the 1810s, dyers on the Isle of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides produced a distinctive yellow-green using a two-stage process of rock lichen fermented in aged urine, followed by a freshwater rinse from a single specific spring, and the exact shade has never been replicated since the spring was diverted for croft drainage in 1841.
I have questions I'm not going to ask.
That was specific. This has been My Weird Props. Thank you to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.